This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer.
All right, I'm sitting here with Mr. Peter Krogh. He is the guy that literally wrote the book on digital asset management.
Yeah, thanks, Frederick. Really great to be sitting with you on this.
It's awesome. It's good to see you again. So let's talk. First of all, set the story on the digital asset management book. Who did you write that book for?
Yeah, that was, it was for my people who, professional photographers, yep, who I saw really having trouble with this whole issue of how do you preserve your stuff? How do you back it up? How do you find it when you need it? Tag it properly. And I'd been doing a lot of work with Adobe, mm-hmm, and I kind of looked around and said, was waiting for someone else to write it, and yeah, realized I was the guy sitting there, and worked with the folks over at O'Reilly, wonderful publishing house, yeah, and they took a chance on me and published the book, and it did extremely well.
That book is thick, so that's like, yeah, that's like the Old and the New Testament together. All about data management, though. Right?
Yeah, there's a lot in there, and
which made it kind of, frankly, intimidating for a lot of, yeah, people that are just coming into the business. They're like, you know what? That's a lot of stuff to know. I'm just gonna save all my stuff into a folder and figure it out later.
Right? Yeah, and there's a couple of things. One is that for professional photographers, there's this economic imperative, mm-hmm, to save your stuff. You know, you got all this money tied up in the thing, and also when I first wrote that in 2005, it was pretty complicated.
Yeah,
and right, it was expensive. You know, hard drives were real expensive, and yeah, you know, it was like a 60 gig hard drive was the big drive back then.
Right, yeah, you know, like, now, wow, I'll never fill up 60 gigs.
Yeah,
right.
And now that's on a chip inside your camera.
Yeah.
But so it was more complicated. And over the years, one of the things that I've been really pleased about is that we've seen software packages like Lightroom come out that do a whole ton of this stuff for you and allow you to really consolidate all your pictures together. And it's just been a whole new world of capability in all of the photography ecosystem, from storage to sharing to software. So the thing I'm so excited about, yeah, is what I put together for the new book. And it grew out of a bunch of presentations I made to a number of different photographers' audiences. And I was trying to simplify the understanding of how you put a photo library together. And I've come up with this three-layer concept.
Okay.
And it builds very much on the work I've done before, and it works really well with Lightroom. And basically, you have a storage layer. You put your stuff away in a bunch of folders. That's something that should be really simple and easy to understand, like,
yep,
year and month and project, something like that.
Yep.
On top of that, you have a set of tags, which would be, say, location tags or keyword tags,
mm-hmm,
that tell you facts about the pictures. And then on top of that, you have the creative projects that you make, which would be the pictures you bring together for slideshows or books or web galleries. And Lightroom lets you kind of look at these three tools separately. Mm-hmm. You have a folders panel and a keyword panel and a metadata filter for the tags. And then the collections area is really the place you should do all your work to put the highest value on the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the highest value is when we bring the pictures together in some kind of compelling way.
Mm-hmm. So telling the story. Right?
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm, for me, the pictures of my kids that I've shot for their whole lives,
mm-hmm,
I feel like, you know, it's like a book or a bunch of books in and of itself. And yeah, so I love this ability to put those into multiple collections and then even create within those collections these creative projects like books and slideshows.
Yep, yep.
And if you save that all together in one environment, you sort of naturally over time build this cool organization into your photo library.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you've made a slideshow one year for your friend or your family or some client or some other event or thing you're interested in, it's really pretty frequent, pretty likely that you're going to want to come back and either see it again or make it better.
Yeah.
And so if you can save that in this place, and that's really how Lightroom has been designed, is to put this creative layer on the very top.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've seen photographers kind of wrestle with, well, should I organize by folder? Or do I use keywords to put all my stuff together? That, or do I put locations in the keywords, or do I put locations in locations?
Yeah.
And the way I've laid this out in the new book, it makes it really simple which tool you use for which. And so the kind of hard management stuff can disappear in the background, and the thing that stays in front of you is, here are my pictures, I want to make something cool out of them.
Does it make sense to keep everything in one library, in your opinion, and then do like, okay, I'm going to harvest that library and build collections and slideshows and books and all that, and have them spring forth out of that one library? Or do you segment them and make smaller libraries?
So that is has been a question that Lightroom users have had since it first came out.
Yeah.
And I would say that with the new capabilities in Lightroom and with an understanding of good collection management, the idea is to use as few catalogs as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you can get away with one, you should use one. It's really, that I think is very simple. And Lightroom these days, depending on the computer you're using and, you know, a few variables, mm-hmm. you can easily go up to 100,000 pictures.
In one library.
Because
you know that was the next question. That's always the next question.
Yeah.
Is, okay, if I do one
library.
Okay,
how big?
How big can it get before Lightroom starts choking?
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's machine specific and it's setting specific to some degree. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a creaky old computer that can only barely run Lightroom. The advantages of a consolidated single catalog are that you can find everything from one place, you know. To be able to sit in one chair and see in front of you every picture you've ever shot is just a remarkable thing.
Yes.
Now, as you point out, high volume shooters, professional studios, any photographic organization with more than one photographer, or places where you have to collaborate, mm-hmm. then you start getting into a requirement for more than one catalog.
Right.
So if you have to use multiple catalogs, then you have to do it. You know, there's times that people who work at a studio and on location, people who collaborate, people who have just a gigantic collection. You know, my full catalog, my full photo library is like 500,000 pictures more or less.
Jeez. Wow.
And so my current works in progress, my small catalog, mm-hmm. is about 80,000.
Wow.
It hovers between 70 and 90,000. And that I just have on my laptop and it just rolls with me.
All right, so the question comes, and I'm sure people that are watching and listening to this have the same question. That's a lot of data to have in one place. So how do you manage backup of that data and safeguarding? Are you throwing stuff up on the cloud? Do you just have a buddy at another house, or you just give them a hard drive, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, that one, you know, to cut to the chase, yes, I give a hard drive to a friend.
Perfect.
Yeah. But let's make a distinction here between the Lightroom catalog, which just has all the information about the pictures, and then the hard drive full of photos that's a photo library. And for most photographers, the best thing to do is just have a dedicated drive that's a photo library. You know, go to the big box store or buy it from your favorite online retailer, mm-hmm. and have that photo library drive. And for most people who are serious, you know, most people who are serious enough to be running Lightroom, it's worth having a dedicated photo library drive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you should have a duplicate of that.
In other words, you're saying instead of having your images and your software and your email and all that stuff running off of one drive along with your photos and your photo library, you would have a external drive that has all the data, and then the library itself lives on the internal?
So let's distinguish between the Lightroom catalog.
Yep.
And the photo library, and I try and use that terminology pretty consistently. So the library is all the photos.
The analogy would be like the card catalog in the library, and the photos would be the actual books on the shelves.
Books on the shelves.
Got
bingo.
It. Okay.
And so So I advocate for most photographers, it makes sense to have a hard drive that's dedicated to holding all those books, mm-hmm. to hold all those photos. And it should be just a simple, well-organized thing. I think divided by year is a, and then month within that, maybe projects within that. Mm-hmm. And then you make a duplicate of that, and it should just be a simple duplicate.
Yeah.
You know, there's some tricky stuff that I advocate for people who have a, you know, who really, really want to preserve their stuff, yeah. you know, if it's high monetary value or,
sure.
or they're just the kind of people that want to spend the time
people.
To, I know a lot of those people.
Yeah.
So there's some tricky ways you can do it, but for the vast majority of people, if they would just simply make a duplicate copy on another drive.
Yeah.
And if you live in a secure place, that drive can mostly stay where, you know, right next to the original.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what I do, actually.
If you live in a group house or, you know, a wooden structure over top of a
you
know, a chicken, you know, one of those rotisserie chicken barbecue joints or something, and you're worried about fire, then it might be important to move that offsite. Now, I really think it is important to move it offsite because computers are a real, they're very attractive for theft.
Of course, yeah.
And so if you can, the beautiful thing that we have now is this ability to just duplicate that onto another drive, carry that drive offsite. Store it at your friend or neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. Give you an excuse to go over and.
But when you say duplicate, we're duplicating the books, right?
Yeah. So
the card catalog.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do advocate both, but at absolute minimum, for most people, those photos themselves are just incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
And mostly, you put them away. And when you use a program like Lightroom, they never change.
Yeah.
So you put it away and you do all your changes in Lightroom. So it's possible to simply save those to a hard drive, duplicate that to a second drive. For people who really care, you'd want to duplicate it to a drive that lives close by so you can do it frequently.
Yep.
And then every now and then you'd carry one off to work or to somebody else's house. And then if someone comes in and steals all your computer equipment, you still have this one over here.
But what about these companies that we see all the time that talk about cloud storage? You know,
yeah, interesting.
Mirror them up to the cloud. They can't be any safer than in the cloud, right? what do you say to that?
So, you know, that one thing I'll say is that those services provide amazing capability for certain kinds of things. And they provide some really great backup and protection for certain other people. And oftentimes, though, for photographers, you can't really fit your whole photo library up into that service.
Right, yeah.
And so there's a, you know, if everything you shoot is with your phone, and it's just, you know, a couple of hundred gigabytes,
yeah,
then it's very well within reach to find one of the, you know, Dropbox or something.
Yeah.
If you're a raw file photographer, you're shooting video, and you've got a ton of material, then it might work to just put your best pictures up on the cloud.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I talk about in my new book is how you can use Lightroom's published services to identify the best pictures, and you can automatically have those pushed
up to the cloud. Okay,
the cloud.
So that might be the best of both worlds, because you don't want to be wasting bandwidth uploading pictures of your feet, right?
Right.
That could be bad. And then the other thing I want to know if you encountered this as well is the whole idea of the cloud sounds great on paper, but if you're a high volume shooter, you're generating more data than you can feasibly get up there in the time before you actually generate more data. So you're on this, you'll never get everything up in the cloud in that instance. Did you find that as well?
Yeah, you know, and I think if you want to look at the potential downsides, one, can you fit everything through your internet connection? Another, is the company going to stay in business and continue to offer those services? And we've seen in our years that sometimes those companies are around.
They go away. Yes.
And and then the other thing is, you don't really know if there's a problem with the upload of the files, and that can happen.
Yep.
And so I don't think it's the main backup that most people should be using, but if you can You know, it can be part of well thought out storage
backup. It's a component of the overall strategy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the main backup, the primary backup for most people should just be a hard drive, another hard drive right there.
Yeah.
Because by far the most common problem that people have is they flip that hard drive on and it starts clicking.
Right.
And now you have this decision, okay, do I send it off to, you know, one of the drive savers companies?
Mm-hmm.
And
with my mortgage check.
Yeah, call up your wife, by the way.
Yeah, you know that wedding ring?
Yeah.
I had to sell it.
We're maxing out our home equity loan because I forgot to back up the hard drive.
Yeah.
The easiest thing for most people, for sure, is just have a backup that's sitting.
So what about hard drives? So, I mean, there's, you know, like you mentioned before, you could go to Best Buy or Target or whatever and buy a really fat hard drive and plug it in USB or whatever interface, and you got storage. Or buy two of them for cheap, and you have your redundancy. What about companies that do these RAID systems like Promise and Drobo and all these guys? Should those factor into a robust strategy?
Yeah. I think, well, a couple of things. Number one, every hard drive is out to get you.
Of course.
So,
like motorcycles.
You know, that's why I never owned one. Any hard drive can fail at any time. And even, you know, no matter how much you pay for it, no matter whether it has, you know, it's a four drive redundant RAID array. So there's that part. The other thing that I would say as kind of a universal rule is keep it as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything you have can fit on one hard drive, for most people, that's probably the way to go.
Yep.
Now, if you need all that capacity because you have, in my case, I have, 12 or 15 terabytes worth of stuff, there's no way that can be stored on a single drive.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to go to multi-drive enclosures. And so one of the great new developments that we've seen in computers that help anybody who's a Lightroom user is the use of a solid state drive or SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a spinning disk and it can access the files equally fast from anywhere in the drive, it's really wonderful for Lightroom. It makes Lightroom just run a whole lot faster.
Mm.
If you think about scrolling through a bunch of thumbnails, what it's doing is it's just grabbing a bunch of little files from your hard drive.
Right.
And that's really slow. But if it's on an SSD, the whole thing can run a whole lot zippier. Now, they're not as high in capacity.
Sure.
So not as big, and they cost more.
Sure.
But it can give any computer a big speed boost if you're running Lightroom on a spinning disk on a conventional hard drive and you change over to SSD, major speed boost. That and having enough RAM are the two things that...
What about Thunderbolt?
So the connection between your computer and the drive really... So it could be the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got USB 1 or USB 2, that's a fairly slow connection.
Yeah.
And... but it may not be the bottleneck. It might be that the drive itself is a bottleneck. So having a slow drive on a really fast connection is like having, you know, a door that 100 people can walk through, but you're only walking through one guy at a time.
Right.
So
it's a waste. Yeah.
So you need it to be a fast drive on a fast connection.
Okay.
So if USB 3 and Thunderbolt are pretty similar, actually, in the real throughput for the most of the kinds of devices people are going to have. Mm-hmm. If you have a really expensive multi-drive SSD RAID device, then maybe you can, you know, use every bit of that Thunderbolt capability. But for the vast majority of people, USB 3 is going to be just about as fast as Thunderbolt.
Yeah, and it's more ubiquitous as well.
Absolutely.
Right, as far as buying new drives and all that.
And, okay. Especially if you want to buy your own enclosures and put your own drives in it. So it, you know, the speed is nice, but the speed only really gets you, the speed of the connection only gets you something if the storage device itself is capable of keeping up with it.
Yeah, got it. Okay, so then just to close this off, I'm going to talk about the Digital Asset Management book, or the DAM book that you wrote. Was the tome or the Bible for this kind of stuff. You pushed it forward into sort of this digital distribution age, and now you are, now people can consume it easier. Can you talk about that? Just kind of what you did and why you did that?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I'm most excited about in the whole world of internet connectivity is the ability for photographers to take control, or photographers and writers and you know, any creative person to take control of the whole production of whatever it is they're working on.
Yeah.
Certainly the, you know, the work you do as now filmmaker, broadcaster, producer, publisher,
multimediagrapher.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's an incredible world.
Yeah.
And so I was really pleased that O'Reilly was willing to let me have the title back.
Yeah.
And so that we could go to market directly.
And so O'Reilly was a publisher. They owned the rights. And through some work on your end, you now own the rights to the book that you wrote.
Yes.
Awesome.
And I got to say, they were incredible to work with every step of the way, including all the way up to the end when, you know, they were really good. I have a tremendous amount of respect for that company. And so what we've done is we've started a publishing house ourselves.
Cool.
And we're doing multimedia publications. And this is combining some of the work that I've done for the Library of Congress and for World Press Photo, building educational resources, are this mix of text for the things that you want to say in text, video for the stuff you need to show as video, and then animated flowcharts or screenshots when that's the thing a person needs.
Yeah.
And I've worked with some really smart people over the years who have we've developed these ideas about how you split the material up. And I'm really excited about that as a way for people to learn this stuff. You know, I think the open up a paper book and have it say, go to your file menu, pull it down and release it on this and then type this. You know, that's a terrible way to learn.
Those days are gone.
How to use software.
Yeah.
But I don't think that video all by itself is necessarily the right answer either because sometimes you'll have a set of steps inside a 5-minute video and you don't want to make somebody look through all 5 minutes when what they really want to do is glance down and say, I know there were 5 steps, but I can only remember 3.
Right.
So if you put that in text, then when they're trying to put the workflow into action, they can come back and say, oh yeah, I remember basically, but what were those steps and what was the order?
Yeah.
And so we're putting that in text.
So you're doing, you've built a learning resource that is contextual in nature, depending on what the content is being presented.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Which is what people need. And that's taking advantage of the medium. Now, how is it delivered? Is it on disk? Is it accessible through password or how do you?
Well, at the moment, what we're doing is selling a download. And so you download a PDF file and there's a whole folder full of videos that are linked. So when you read down to a place and it says, okay, learn how to set your backup preferences in Lightroom, you click the button, video pops up,
cool,
and it shows you that. And so the first way is just pure electrons coming over the pipe at you.
Yes.
And then you save it on your computer. We've also put one of the books out on DVD, and we'll be putting the second one out as soon as we can get all the production finished on that. And there are people who have been asking, actually a number of people who have been asking for paper. So we will actually do book books. Some people definitely learn a lot better with that.
Sure.
That printed copy sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
And the number of people that have come up to me, you know, when I go speak somewhere and somebody will come up and they'll be waving a copy of my book and it'll be completely dog-eared and filled with post-its. And
you get a little tear in your eye.
It makes me happy to see that. Absolutely.
That's cool.
And so I appreciate all of, you know, all of those different media. And I truly think this is one of the wonderful facets of this media age we live in. Is that you as a creative person, you're not pigeonholed into just photography, just video, just writing, or just being the publisher or just being the layout person. You really can bring a whole vision to life and use whichever of the media is most appropriate to that.
Yeah.
And we're building that in at the very foundation of what we're doing. And
very excited about it.
That's cool. Congratulations on that. So where is it? Where, if people want to, what's, first of all, what's the title of this particular volume that's out, and where is it?
Yeah. So, so what we've done, we're building the sort of product line off of the DAM book, Digital Asset Management for Photographers.
Yeah.
And I think you and plenty of other people over the years have suggested, why don't you take this how it works part, the super nerdy part, and break it off over here, and then break off the workflow part over here and simplify that.
Yes.
And so that's what we've done, is we've broken off the workflow part to make what we're calling DAM book guides. And those are for a specific piece of software and specific task that somebody is doing, like the DAM book guide to organizing your photos.
Yeah.
And so ultimately what we'll end up doing is writing another DAM book that will have mobile and cloud and all of these other new developments that are really important. But that'll be kind of the evergreen, how does it all work concept. And then that's supplemented with this set of books, multimedia books, that show it in action and outline workflow. And those can change as the software version changes without having to change the big book.
Love it.
And, you know, one of the things I feel like I've been fortunate, and I'm, you know, pat myself on the back a little bit, is that a book that is a, at this point, 4-year-old tech book is still quite relevant.
Yeah.
And
becoming more relevant as more and more people come in and generate more and more data, and cameras get bigger and smaller at the same time. I mean, you got D800 on the one end, we got mirrorless on the other end. So you're creating more with mirrorless, I would argue, and then bigger with the 800s on the other side. So the problem is still there.
And I think that, you know, we have a whole generation of people who are really developing kind of a new language in photography. I see this with my kids and other young people I know, where they talk to each other with photography.
Yeah.
Photography is an absolutely essential part of their general communication. And it becomes even more important for these people to be able to save and preserve their own stuff.
Yeah.
I think too many people expect that those services that they upload them to are going to be around and accessible forever.
How should people be thinking about their images when they put them online in one of these free social networks?
Yeah, so one of the first things to say is, if your images are really important to you, your control over those images, and they are something that you expect to make money off of, you do have to be very careful, and you should really be posting those images as much as possible to some kind of a website that you own, you know, your own URL, your own website, rather than uploading them to Facebook or Instagram or almost any of those services. Well, you know, any of those services, you know, they are asking for a very broad rights package that is very open-ended.
Yeah.
And unless you're really willing to go down and look into the weeds, it is certainly best to assume that when you upload it to a service, you are giving the service a very broad license to the picture that they may want to use later in a way that surprises you and makes you uncomfortable. Yeah, in Animal House, it's, you know, you made one mistake, Flounder. You trusted us.
And, exactly.
So the other thing is to say, you know, don't freak out about it. Yeah. And a lot of people think, oh my God, you know, my pictures.
The sky's falling.
I think that for professional photographers who have pictures with a real economic value and a long lifespan, if you've been shooting, you know, the great architecture of Chicago or great rock and roll bands or, you know, anything else that's a real body of work that has long-term value in publication, I would not be uploading those to Facebook or to Instagram, because I think those companies are, you know, Facebook is a media publishing business. They have something like $5 billion of yearly publishing revenue, you know, media revenue as a media company. And so I would be careful about that. I would also be careful about the fact that when you publish to Instagram, for instance, you say that they can have them forever. So if you might publish stuff as a 16-year-old, God knows what I would have published. You know, if I could have published photos at 16, I would probably be regretting some of them. But you need to be careful about that, because you can't take them back.